Welcome to the Empirical Cycling Podcast. I'm your host, Coley Moore, and I want to thank everybody for listening as always. I want to ask that you subscribe to the podcast and also share it on forums or with friends or whatever if you think that there's some good information in here. iTunes ratings and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts are wonderful, especially if they're 5 stars, if I may be so bold. And also remember that we're an ad-free podcast, so if you'd like to donate to the show, you can do so at empiricalcycling.com/donate. We also have the show notes up on the website. There aren't any for this episode, though. We also have merch at empiricalcyclingpodcast.threadless.com. And if you have any coaching and consultation inquiries, questions, and comments, you can please email empiricalcycling@gmail.com. And also don't forget, in the Instagram, Empirical Cycling, in the stories, weekend AMAs. So give me a follow if you want to participate in that, or you can just read. So today, starting a new series. It's not really interviewing. Obviously, I'm not a good interviewer, and I wouldn't want to sully the name of the good trade of interviewing people and the journalists and everyone else who does that kind of thing well. That's obviously not me. So this is just conversations. I have a little bit of a roadmap for these, and we're going to touch on some points, but otherwise, it is completely free-roaming. And the reason that I'm starting this series is because I've been told by several people that some of the conversations that I've had with other training folks, coaches, scientists, researchers, that these are interesting, which I certainly always think is true, but would potentially be good podcasts. So we're going to start to do that. I have a couple guests lined up. And the first guest that we have today is Alex Carmona. Now, Alex is a coach at Empirical Cycling. And so I'm sure some of you listening to this are coached by him already, and you already know everything that I'm about to say to be very true, which is that Alex is a great coach, but he's also really fast. He's been racing for a long time. He's been coaching for a couple of years, and he's also been coaching himself for a little while too. And so I thought it would be really interesting to kind of have a broader talk with Alex, because I've never actually chatted. We talk about, you know, coaching other people all the time, but we haven't talked about him coaching himself. So this is going to be a little bit more focused on that. So we get into that a little bit. And so I hope that this is interesting to people to have this kind of, broader philosophical question. And, when we have scientists on and the like, we'll get into some technical stuff with them too, or that's the plan anyway. And so so I hope that this is enjoyable, and I hope that everybody enjoys listening to these kinds of things. So if you do like that kind of stuff, you can let me know. You can shoot me an email. Also, if you have any coaching inquiries for me or Alex or our third coach, Fabiano, who's also excellent, by the way, just shoot me an email, empiricalcycling@gmail.com, also for consultation inquiries as well. And without further ado, let us get right to the interview. Actually, one more ado. We had a problem with the audio file, so I've cleaned it up as best as possible. And I apologize for that off the bat. So I cleaned it up as best I could. So the background noise on Alex's channel is going to come in and out. And occasionally, if he and I are back and forth a little bit, you are going to hear me delayed about a second and a little quieter, and that's embedded in the audio file, and I did the best I could to clean it up, so I apologize for that. All the audio engineering skills in the world can't really fix that, but I think that the interview was really good, and we wouldn't be able to do it as good the second time, so apologies again for the audio. Hopefully, it's pretty minimal, so hopefully it's not too distracting, Now, without further ado, let's get into it. Why don't you tell the story about how you got started in cycling and kind of how you eventually became a coach with me here at Empirical Cycling?
So I started being coached in 2013 by Steve Weller. His company is Bell Lab Coaching. Yeah, I was racing with a bunch of guys. They're all being coached by him. They're like, oh, you got to work with Steve, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, sure. Like, I want to coach at... So I worked with him, really enjoyed the relationship I built with him and the way he did things. And really liked that experience. And I think it kind of left me feeling, I really enjoyed this and I would love to be able to mentor other cyclists kind of the same way he did for me. So it was actually a funny thing. That had becoming more and more into my mind as I had, gone from, Cat 3 to Cat 1, and felt a bit more experienced, I was like, you know, I'd like to maybe be able to offer that to other people at some point. And then,
let me ask you, what was it about your experience with him that you really enjoyed specifically that made you think, I want to pass this on to other people?
Yeah. Gosh, what was it exactly? I mean, he was just a really down-to-earth, nice guy, you know, and I felt like I could talk to him and tell him what was going on, and you know, he just got it. He understood. He had been through the stuff I was going through, so just that kind of support, you know, and this kind of tough thing you're pushing through, that really, that help, I really appreciated so much, you know, and so, yeah, I really wanted to be able to do that for other people. I would say that's the biggest thing. Yeah. Just that kind of that buddy in your corner, that like friendly, you know, relationship really just meant a lot. Yep.
Yeah. And so that led you to wanting to, you know, be a coach yourself. And I think you would actually, you would sign up to be a coach with him briefly, right? Cause I remember you having a business card.
So funny enough, like I had been kind of thinking about coaching more and more, and then kind of out of nowhere, he reaches out to me and is like, hey man, you ever thought about coaching? Like, would you want to coach for me? And I'm like, dude, yes. Like, holy shit. Of course. So I mean, you know, we kind of began this process of having me coach for him. And, you know, honestly, I don't know exactly what happened, if it was a bit on my part or his part, but it just didn't really kind of come to fruition like I think we both thought it would. And, you know, so, yeah, so that kind of, I guess, went nowhere. And then I took, like, you know, a year off basically from racing, just to kind of give myself a break for the first time in 5 years of, you know, catting up and just going full bore with racing. So I took a break and then, totally missed racing and training hard and all that stuff. And I was like, you know what, this is like in my blood. This is what I love. Like, I'm going to keep doing this. So started training again. And then, you know, a bunch of guys I race with, they were working with you now, and like you were this big coach and stuff, and I'm like, okay, like who's cool? Like Coley's like onto something here. So, you know, I was in, I think, Columbia at the time doing some of my own training, and I was like, you know, if I'm coming back and I want to really do this right, you know, why not, you know, start working with a coach again, and you know, kind of wanted, I guess, a fresh perspective or something different, something new, just try something else. So I was like, hey, what the hell, like reach out to Coley and see what he thinks about coaching me and stuff. And then kind of at the same time, I was like, you know, he's coaching a bunch of my friends and like, you know, I don't know his deal, but you know, I know Coley and he's a nice guy. Like what the hell? Like, I'll just say, hey man, like, you know, want to ever think of taking on assistant coach? And then I just, you know, I just threw it out there for shits. And then I was like, holy shit. He said, yeah.
Because well, I can tell that you've got that thing of, you know, because like I've known you for a while before that, and you've always been like the nicest guy anybody's ever met.
Oh, man.
And like not only that, but like, you know, you were like a selfless racer, even though, you know, kind of when to take your own opportunities and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I think Alex actually has like the right personality to be a coach. And also, you know, you've got this deep history of training, and you've, you know, and I was like, I think I remember I said something like, I want to train you for a little while just so you kind of get the hang of it. So what was the big difference between like training with Bell App and training with me?
Oh God, I don't want to upset anyone here.
You won't upset me. Don't worry.
Are you or Steve? I mean, I don't know. I have immense respect for you and for Steve and for, you know, I guess coaches in general and stuff. And you know, everyone has their approach and their experience, you know, and I respect that. But you know, I think, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I notice is like, you're like, hey man, we're going to do this like really intense block of VO2 max work. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I've done VO2. Like I'm into that. And I'm like, sure, let's go. And then you're like, I don't know. And then, yeah, you threw me into it. And I was like, holy shit. Like this is intense. So I think the kind of more, I think this is a word, specificity.
Yep.
Sometimes I use that word. I'm like, is that a word? I'm like, yeah, that's a word.
Specificness.
I think the specificness, the specificity of your program and what you were assigning and stuff, that was the biggest difference to me. And I think, you know, that really, I think, yeah, showed the biggest results. You know, like, we want to improve FTP. Well, let's go hard with FTP. And we did. And man, that was huge for me. And I saw the results and I'm like, you know, I kind of wish I had been doing this for a bit longer. Especially, you know, I think once you get to, you know, for athletes who've been training for so long, right? Like they need something new, you know, and they need to push harder than they've been pushing before. And that can be, I think, challenging. So I think I was definitely there, you know, I'd been coached for a long time. I've been training for a long time, doing a lot of the same stuff. It's, you know, it's time for something new to push through the next level. And I feel like that's, you did a great job with that.
Wow. Thank you. I just want everybody listening to know that we did not plan that out. It just happened to be, I didn't know where that question was going to go, but I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
No, totally.
I think that's actually one of the things that does make a really big difference when somebody is well trained is it's not only that the specificity, it's the overload in specificity. And I think that, you know, you've found even working with people who are relatively new, who, you know, not like right off the couch, but who are pretty well trained and can handle the training load. I think, you know, in you and your athletes, you've seen the results that that kind of thing can get, even if somebody's not, you know, really well trained and needs a change of program.
Totally. Definitely. Yep.
Well, so what do you think is probably the easiest thing that you've found as a coach? So what's like your favorite stuff about it and what's the worst about it? Don't name names. We're going to keep everybody anonymous.
Oh my God. What's the best about it? You know, I think honestly it's, I think a big part is kind of what I was talking about, you know, with my coaching experience being coached, is just that kind of one-on-one talking with people, supporting them and hearing, you know, their experience with training or whatever, and offering kind of support and saying, hey, you know, like, yeah, you didn't, you know, do as well as you want to do or whatever, but like, you know, let's look at this aspect or this aspect, or like, you know, just kind of offer my perspective on it. And yeah, I like just kind of being able to do that, have those kind of...
Yeah, it's a lot of talking about what happens off the bike as much as on the bike, right?
Exactly, yeah. Like, I mean, I think at times, I'm like, I feel like I'm more of like a bike therapist than a, you know, coach. It's like...
Every coach is like that. I usually tell people, like, you know, grown men all the time tell me that they cried. And I'm like, I get it. I've been there. I've done that. You know, I've quit bike racing 5 times when I've gotten dropped from the Cat 4 road race. Then I get back to the car and I'm like, I'm going to train harder, damn it. I've done the same shit.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the stuff I kind of love. Just being supportive and hearing people out. And
yeah, and you've had a tough time too in your coaching, I think, because half of it has been when there's basically no racing.
Yeah, you know, you know, it just kind of all happened all of a sudden, you know, and I kind of realized that. I'm like, oh my God, like no one's, including myself, has raced in like a year. And I'm like, you know, yeah, that's been not as, I don't say not as easy, but it's been definitely different. You know, when you have events, races, whatever going on, I mean, you know, that helps to give a lot more focus, you know, to what you're doing.
Yeah.
But without that kind of main focus and drive, it's like, well, you know, you gotta, people are going to want to keep riding and training, but that can get tiresome in itself and has its own issues, you know, so kind of helping, I think people have needed a little bit more support and, also, you know, I think more off the bike time, you know, a little bit more easy time. Cause I mean, we just, it's unrealistic or unreasonable to expect people to just keep trying to, you know, or training and grinding and pushing and pushing, you know, it's just like, that's not going to necessarily work for everyone either. So it's been definitely figuring out a balance, I think.
No, I completely agree with you on that. And that's one of the things that I found is, you know, without racing, I was like, oh, we've got this vast ocean in front of us. And like, we can't see any islands to steer towards.
Right.
And, you know, usually having a race or something like that is like, okay, now I've got a marker for this season and now I can work backwards from this marker and I can fill in everything I need to. And then, you know, without that, it's like, well, what are we doing? Okay. How do we build fitness with no specific goals in sight? exactly. And it's been hard, and people, you know, some people just want to push and push and push until either they cry uncle or I tell them to stop. And you've done the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, for a lot of my athletes, or I think like there was a good, like December was like a very like, okay, you've been training all year, you know, like you got to chill, which I feel like usually comes, but I feel like, I don't know. I thought it was maybe more important this year to really give that mental break. I mean, biking and training aside, I mean, it was just a rough year, right, for everyone. And
no, I agree. Cause, you know, one of the things that I think that I started appreciating this year that I didn't as much before was that mental fatigue is real fatigue and it'll affect you on the bike as much as anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And so I didn't train you for that long, actually. We've had a lot of discussions on training. Then you went and you were like, I'm going to, you know, take this opportunity to train myself. And you and I have actually never talked about that. So I want to talk to you about that right now. So what, what's it been like training yourself? And this might be some insight into other self-coached athletes who are listening, because I know there's a lot who listen.
Yeah, what has it been like training myself? I mean, I like it. I'll say that. I like, you know, I really enjoyed having that structure that like, hey, you got to do this this day, and that's just what you got to do. You know, that really helped me, I think, stick to the training, progress, etc. You know, at this point, I don't want to say I'm beyond that, but I think I've developed a good intuition with training, you know, so I know I can, you know, I know what I need to do. I don't want to say I know everything, right? But I know for the most part what I need to do, how much or little I can rest, you know, so I feel like it's nice to have that flexibility of being able to, you know, train the days that that work best for my life, to train and then rest when it makes sense to as well. That kind of flexibility, I really, that's probably my favorite part of just coaching myself.
Yeah, it's not only like intervals by RPE, but it's like a whole program by RPE almost.
That's a great way of putting that. Yeah, exactly.
I've found the same thing myself. It's like, you know, today I know like, oh, I didn't sleep well last night. My sprints are going to be garbage today. So I'm going to buckle down on getting to bed at a normal time, which I've sucked at for most of the last year. And tomorrow's going to be better. And it is. And it's like, I, you know, part of me is like, I lost a day, but this is also the same thing that I do with my athletes too. And you do with your athletes.
Yeah,
I had a bad day. I didn't do the ride, or they, you know, they text you like, should I ride today? The answer is no.
Yeah.
Or,
no.
You know, warm up and give it a shot. Like, how bad was your day? Same stuff. I mean, that's also one of the things that I knew that you were going to be really good at. Like when you asked me to, you know, come be a coach. And I was like, yeah, I know that you've got the sympathy and the empathy to be, but you also know when to push people.
Yeah.
You can tell when somebody's dogging it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also coaching myself was helpful with that, you know, 'cause you kind of, you know, I'm like, I like that inflexibility, and I want other, you know, I would like my athletes to feel like they have a flexibility as well, and that they don't, you know, they're not going to die or lose all their fitness if they don't train this one day, and that things can be moved around and accommodated for, you know what I mean? I think often athletes are like, is it okay if we push this a day or switch this around? And I'm like, totally. Like, that is totally fine. Like, it's going to be okay. And, you know, you have to be able to have your life. Cause I think just generally, that's just a huge lesson I've learned, is like, if you don't build in that space, you know, mentally and in your life for other parts other than bike racing, right? Like, you're going to burn out. You're going to not want to do this long term. And I think for me, you know, my goal is to like build like healthy, strong, long-term cyclists and bike racers.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're doing a great job, personally. I would tell you if you weren't, probably not on the podcast, but But I want to also ask, what kind of guinea pig stuff have you done to yourself with training? Because I do guinea pig myself all the time. And that's part of the reason that I have a hard time with my own training consistency is that I push myself really hard. I'm the only athlete that I've ever really overtrained. I took a very long time off the bike. So what have you done to yourself where you go, I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm the only one who's going to suffer from it.
Yeah. You know, I almost don't want to say some of this stuff because I'm like, don't do this, even though I did it.
Well, just give a general outline.
General outline. No, I think the biggest offense or the biggest thing I did I think I've talked to you about this a bit, is, you know, messing around with fasted training. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of happened almost on accident, but it got to a point where I was like, I'm basically training almost all the time, or, you know, at least during the week when I'm training before work, you know, I'm riding fasted and I can put out really good numbers. It got to a point where I was like doing FTP tests fasted. And I was like, and I set new PR that way. And I was like, well, this works for me, you know? And
did
I kind
of do anything
of,
harder than FTP fasted and have good numbers with it? Cause usually typically right. studies, here's the thing is like, as long as you're eating carbs the rest of the day, like, you know, your glycogen stores are still topped up, you know? So,
yeah. So, yep. I'd have to go back and look at everything, but I mean, it was, you know, I was basically doing everything, all my training, fasted, I'd say, for at least, you know, maybe a 2-year period. But, you know, I didn't do the thing where I was like, I'm going to, you know, train fasted this day with X workout, you know, and maybe that one does include really, intense intervals or like that, over FTP, and then, you know, do the same workout with eating, you know.
I
should have done that.
We should also put it out on the podcast that you eat a, I think the scientific term is a metric shit fuck ton of carbs. the number of bananas that you bring to the house for a stage race is legendary. Like, you can clear out a grocery store of bananas.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And I think that's also worth touching on, is like, my diet is very high in carbohydrates. So I think it just worked naturally for me because, you know, I'm never skimping on the carbs. I feel like I'm always topping up, right? So, yeah.
Are you eating on the bike during these rides, or how long do they usually go fasted? Or like on no breakfast, we should say.
On no breakfast, yeah. Only with coffee. You know, I mean, usually it was like maybe two and a half hours at the most, and I wouldn't eat anything on the bike. You know, I would get home and then like have immediately like a, you know, big smoothie and stuff like that.
But longer than that, how did you find?
Yeah. Yeah, so I did do a few, long rides totally fasted. I've only done a few, maybe like, you know, less than five, and I think the longest was around 5 hours, no food before, no food during, you know. And I don't know if I would ever do that again. You know, it was like fun. It was an interesting experiment, more just saying, hey, can I do this? You know, can my body do this? And yeah, it could. It did it. I'm alive. But I can't really speak to it being really beneficial or what it really did for me, other than just giving me, you know, having done it.
Yeah, I mean, I find that kind of training, like I'll do like low carb stuff with people sometimes. And I've done a lot of low carb with a very small handful of athletes. And we'll talk about, some of the next couple upcoming podcast episodes, we'll be getting at this, some of the effects of that. But I rarely have people do fasted rides. And I usually find actually that people who have to wake up at like 5 a.m. and they have to get on the bike by 5:30 or they're going to be late for work, they actually do need to eat something, and it seems to, some people are good at that and some people are not good at that. Do you have athletes who are in the same boat as that?
You know, actually, I have one athlete who, does the fasted riding. It's, you know, it's, from everything he's told me, it sounds basically the same thing that I did, and he's had fine results with it. And, you know, I think if it's a harder workout or a longer workout, you know, he'll, he'll eat stuff and take in calories, but I think he's similar in that he's like, you know, vegetarian, vegan, eats a lot of high carb foods, you know, so I think that it works for him as it kind of worked for me.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So in the vein of self-coaching, what have you found are like the plus sides and the downsides, like, especially with like accountability and objectivity? Cause you know, you've asked me advice, like, what do I do with athlete X, but you haven't said, what do I do with myself? Like, you have not come to me for advice on that. So I have not been giving you any objectivity on your own training. So like, what do you find coaching yourself, you know, is kind of the effects of that? Like, does it work well? Does it not work well? Like, are you pretty well self-motivated?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're coaching yourself, it really helps if you're, you know, have good self-discipline, which I would say I do. And that's not a super hard thing for me. It's never has been. So, you know, I think really the biggest thing is just writing out a plan like I would for any of my athletes and saying, okay, these are the events, these are the goals, this is the timeline, et cetera, and just filling it in. And then just sticking to that plan. And I find it much easier to stick to if the guesswork is sticking out, I have written out. That makes it a lot easier to stick to.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things that I've found with self-coached people when I do consultations is either they don't give the plan enough time to work, or, you know, they're also like not sure what to put in the plan. And, you know, I think you actually have an advantage in that way because, you know, you've been a coached athlete for such a long time that you kind of know the routine. And as a coach of other people, you know, you have, you know, like 20 to 50 times the amount of programming experience as like the average self-coached athlete does,
right?
Just coaching themselves,
right.
You know?
Coaching themselves, you know?
Right. So I actually just had this thought now, what would you say about the idea of like, if anybody out there is like coaching yourself and you have a friend that's coaching themselves, like getting the two heads together and talking about each other's training plans and, you know, cause that also sounds like it might create more problems than it would solve.
Yeah. I think it could go either way in that, like, you know, if the people are decently informed, like kind of, comparing results or, you know, methodology might be helpful, but everyone's different. So like it might not, and it might just lead to more confusion and worse outcomes. So I don't know about that.
No, I actually think you're right on that. Okay. So have you had any like, insights into training and coaching that you think, man, I think this is like, I have a unique perspective, or like, I never would have learned this before if I weren't like coaching other people and myself also.
Yeah. I think something that's become more clear to me, and this is kind of a cliche saying, but like, you know thyself.
How so?
I think, you know, understanding your limits, or I guess your weaknesses, things that you don't do well, and then intentionally trying to improve those things, you know, figuring out like what you do well, what you don't do well, and, you know, like what needs to happen, what needs to be done better, right, to get to the outcome that you want.
So are you speaking like on the bike or off the bike, like general training philosophy, or like?
I'd say everything, you know, I'd say it all, you know, training philosophy, you know, if you're a bike racer, you know, your racing tactics, your race craft, stuff like that. Figuring out what you're good at. And also,
I think it's interesting you say that because, you know, I find that there's two ways to coach folks. And one is, you know, people who really want to like work on their weaknesses, So if somebody's not like a great tactical thinker, you know, I'll say, go watch YouTube videos of crits and like how they set up for the sprint or like how they set up for a breakaway or like, you know, also, you know, with the know thyself, like, do you have the watts to establish a breakaway? Like if you have a 600 watt sprint and, you know, you're in a men's field, in a crit, like you may not be able to get separation. So you've got to like, you know, you've got to like follow an attack or coax somebody. You know, give them a gel to attack or something like that. Get you out of there.
Right. Exactly.
You know, developing that kind of thing. So like, you know, leaning into your weaknesses, but also like leaning away from them. Cause I know a lot of people, for instance, I coach a lot of people and I know a lot of people, and so do you, who don't like crits because of the constant, you know, silly stuff of like danger to your life and limb and bike and things like that. Just kidding. They're not silly. But like, that's why people don't want to do that. That's why they want to be in road races. And then you get into the road races and there's varying degrees of mindset for that kind of stuff, I think. And so there's a lot of people, I think, also who just get into road racing, who like just want races of attrition, you know? And I think I've talked to a lot of people where until I vocalized that to them, they haven't realized like, oh, that's exactly how I want. I just want the rest of the field to melt away. Like, I don't want to have to be involved in RG Bardu. I don't want to have to attack, stuff like that. Like,
I think so. It's like, you know, I guess not so much like know thyself, but it's this process of like knowing yourself, I guess. So just kind of being aware of things and trying to get a better feel of, or I guess what I'm trying to say, just having that focus inward, you know, and having that be in your mind. So, you know, I think after a while of racing and training, you know, some patterns will appear, right? Like, you know, if you're getting dropped from road races all the time, or like certain outcomes are happening, you know, pay attention to those outcomes and think about what they mean, you know. Maybe if you're getting dropped from, you know, road races, you know, maybe you need to work on your FTP or drop a few pounds, whatever. But unless you're not keeping, you know, paying attention to those things, you're not going to really progress. And I think, you know, if I can use myself, for example, I think I thought if I rode hard and showed up to races every weekend, I would just get better at them. And that didn't happen, you know, to a point that worked. And then, you know, you get to Cat 2. And that's just not going to work.
Yeah, then
that's
just not going to work. Have already done that.
Exactly. And so for me, it was really like, okay, I got to understand these races better. I got to understand the courses better. I got to understand who I'm racing against better.
Yeah.
You know, I had to really just examine and reflect on what's going to change the result I'm looking for here. What's going to get me to where I want? You know, I can't just show up and expect the same results, you know? So, I think unless you're trying to be aware of those things and look for those patterns and then be intentional about, you know, changing your behavior or whatever you're doing, then, you know, you're not going to continue to progress. So,
yeah, you know, yeah. I think that's a very elegant way to put what I've been doing very crudely with people, where I say, like, you only have so many cards to play. How are you going to play them in this scenario? What's your winning scenario? And then let's work backwards. So it really does require a good analysis of somebody's skill set and their mindset. Do you want to be in a bunch sprint? No. Okay. Let's take all these options off the table then.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And if I could just for a moment, for all the bike racers out there, if I could just impart some knowledge, do the extra legwork. If you want to do on a race, you know, it's only these rare freaks that just show up and ride away and win. You know, you're not going to do that. Don't try to do that. Don't think you're going to do that. Study the courses, you know, study who you're racing against, know as much as you can before going to the race, and that will do a lot for you. That's my little trick, little secret nugget of information there.
I agree with you completely. I mean, one of the things that I tell people a lot is, especially newer folks in racing, the more experienced folks, I don't hear this nearly as much. But newer folks in racing are always looking at the course. The course is going to do this, course is going to do that. So how should I pace this or that? And it's like, well, It depends on what the rest of the people are doing, you know, because they're going to dictate the race more than the course, unless you're all alone or unless it's like a really, really like obvious thing, like the 20-minute climate hill towns. Like, you got to make that selection and then you can decide what happens in the race. But even that climb is still, you know, there's still some tactics on it.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a good example too. Like, okay, there's gonna be a climb here. Well, then you got to make sure you're at the front of the group going to that climb, you know? And I think that's the difference of just showing up and like being like, okay, whatever happens in the race happens, just, you know, the race is going to go away from you and you're going to be left in the dust. So
yeah, there are a certain amount of things in your control and you should try to control them as best you can, but also, you know, seize opportunities and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot to follow up with you on this, which is, you know, what are the downsides of coaching yourself that you found?
Yeah, the downsides. You know, I think especially with this year with COVID, you know, the lack of races and events to keep focus, you know, I think I've kind of just, you know, I was doing some structured and focused training and doing some of those kind of like experimental workout things on myself and seeing what results came from that and stuff. But, you know, at a point I was just kind of like, you know, I'm just going to like ride my bike because I like riding. And I think that can, you know, I think mentally for me, that's been good, but I think also like, you know, training wise, that time could have been maybe used a bit more constructively. So I think sometimes that kind of total flexibility, freedom, you know, if you're not careful, can lead to just, you know, a lack of progression or focus in training. Kind of relates to that too. It's like, you know, I think if you are getting coached by someone else, or following in someone else's plan, you know, you're going to be doing stuff that you didn't think of. And even if you're like the best coach ever, you know, there's still there's more information out there. There's other methods, ideas, ways of looking at things. So,
Totally.
You know, you're missing out on that. And I think that can be really important.
Well, actually, let me ask you a pointed question then, because my answer to this is yes. How often has your training been influenced by like Instagram or, you know, popular articles and whatnot?
Oh God. You know, not that much. You know, I think.
Oh, you don't spend as much time on Instagram as I do, I think.
I mean, I'm on Instagram. Maybe I'd say more like Strava, honestly. You know, I see people putting in big days or doing certain stuff and I'm like, like I got to do that. You know, why am I not doing that? You know, that's what gets me a bit more, you know, especially if you follow pros and like the shit they do, it's just like, oh man, I suck. Like, I'm not training at all. Like, I only rode 30 miles today and this person's riding like over 100 and therefore, yeah.
Anything else in your mind that you want to touch on?
I think just the thing I've learned or I'd say an important thing that I've learned just not just with bike racing, but life in general. And I was actually talking to somebody a friend of mine who I'm actually going to start coaching the other day was just like, you know, mentors are like so useful and helpful and important in life, you know? And if you're able to kind of have that relationship, it's extremely helpful if you're trying to get better at anything, you know? And so I think as a coach, you know, that's essentially what I'm offering. Like I've done things and gained certain knowledge that I'm going to use to help people who don't have as much experience as I do, you know, reach certain goals. And part of that is, you know, offering a different point of view. And I guess in short, what I'm sort of trying to say is, you know, get a coach. But like, I just think, I mean, whether you're trying to be a better bike racer or like, you know, learn a craft or a skill or whatever, you know, it's just like, this is a really great thing to be able to do. And like, for sure you can learn on your own and try to figure stuff out. But like just having someone else to help you along is invaluable. And those conversations, the relationship you build in that is, I think, worth it in itself. So, you know, I would say for anyone, even if it's someone, you know, who's stronger than you that you talk to sometimes, or like an older rider that you like maybe get good information from, you know, like seek out those relationships. Or, you know, if you're able to get a coach, you know, get a coach and work with them and see what you can learn and pick up. And I think, you know, that's, to me, that's just been a hugely positive and rewarding experience, being coached myself and then now being able to coach other people.
All right. That's our show. Thank you, Alex, for coming on. I really enjoyed this. I have a great time with Alex. I learn something every time I talk to him. So if you learned something and you really enjoyed listening to this, please share the podcast with someone. That is the best thing that you can do to support us if you are in the mood to support us. We love that. Thank you. Also, if you want to support us by donating, you can do so at empiricalcycling.com/donate because we are ad-free. Of course, we don't have any show notes here, but we've got merch. Again, empiricalcyclingpodcast.threadless.com. And if you have any coaching or consultation, inquiries, questions, and comments, if you want to work with me, if you want to work with Alex, or if you want to work with Fabiano, please send us an email, empiricalcycling@gmail.com. And with that, we will see you all soon.